Customs had said to Billy and the gang, you need to pay us $175,000 in cash today for us to release the water. Billy called and said, Andy, we need you to take one big thing for the team. He said, Andy, if you will go down and suck Cunningham's dick, who's the head of customs, and get him to clear all of the containers with water, you will save this festival. And I literally drove home, took a shower, I drank some mouthwash. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm really, and I got into my car to drive across the island to take one for the team. And I got to his office fully prepared to suck his dick.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
Larry. Well, there's a cold opening you don't hear every day. It's become sort of an audio meme. The funniest of many hysterical clips from the story of the Fire Festival. A story so fascinating that Hulu and Netflix released documentaries on it within days of each other. And that guy you just heard, Andy King, was hired by the Fire Festival's so-called mastermind, Billy McFarland, who turned out to be more of a master moron. Billy hired Andy King to save a festival that was headed for disaster right from the very start. This episode is about so many things because the story of the Fire Festival just hits on all the cylinders of human frailty and insanity. Celebrity worship. How easily people are swindled, even now, in the information age. Had any of the thousands who were clipped just looked a little deeper and taken some saltpeter before viewing the promotional videos, they might have realized it was all bullshit. But desire and feelings will overrule logic every time, making humans vulnerable to every kind of predator, from festival promoters to politicians. This episode is about the difference between positive thinking and magical thinking. The former can fuel greatness, the latter always precedes disaster. Ever notice how many of the idiots you might work with claim you are negative when you are in fact realistic? Those idiots are the magical thinkers. They've seen way too many movies. Fire Festival was about the power of social media, of so-called social influencers. They used to be called thought leaders. Maybe that term sounded too Orwellian, but influencers is a bullshit word too. What they are is whores, paid to endorse shit like the Fire Festival. It's also about the power of pointy women, more precisely, the hinted promise of proximity to pointy women. How conniving are we? What hot buttons make us override our natural skepticism and good judgment and say, fuck it, I'll roll the dice, I'll throw 5 or 6 or 12 grand at that, and maybe it will be a transformative experience. More on that bullshit phrase in a moment. What can you do to make yourself unconnable? Well, I'll give you 2 rock-solid, surefire tips that will render you unconnable forever. I'll circle back to those tips a little later in the show. If I've rambled too far without giving you the Fire Festival thumbnail, here it is. A New York wantrepreneur named Billy McFarland dreamed up an app that would allegedly help people book talent for concerts. Then he dreamed up a luxury music festival to promote the app. It would be held on a private island in the Caribbean, allegedly once owned by Pablo Escobar. It wasn't. The festival would headline with Blink 182 and dozens of other acts, with supermodels, ass-to-cheek, luxury villas, gourmet meals, at prices up to $12,000, depending on your choice of accommodations. In other words, a chance to live a weekend like a billionaire for a few thousand bucks. And it was a fucking fiasco. People flew in to discover there were no luxury villas. There were only FEMA tents salvaged from a hurricane. There was no running water. There were no flushing toilets, just filthy portisans. There were no gourmet meals. The only meal provided was a slice of cheese on stale wheat bread in a styrofoam box. A tweeted image of that sandwich has become the de facto meme of the festival that never happened. McFarland is now doing a 6-year prison pull and is being sued for $27 million. Besides the documentaries on Hulu and Netflix, Seth Rogen has a comedy in the works based on it called The Lonely Island. There hasn't been a con job this infamous since Bernie Madoff, although I'll posit that the victims of fire were way, way more pathetic than Madoff's. Madoff's scam was completely financial. Who doesn't want to make money? You kind of need it to live. That could happen to anybody. So the first thing Bernie did was get himself some high-profile celebrity clients like Steven Spielberg. Another was Elie Wiesel. That sets up the trust factor, right? There's Spielberg, one of the most successful guys ever to come out of Hollywood. Not a hint of scandal around him, and he's a fucking billionaire. So people hear Spielberg's invested with Madoff, and who wouldn't then throw money at Madoff? Well, Billy McFarlane took a page from Madoff's playbook when he made Ja Rule his partner. Hardly in Spielberg's league, but then the Fyre Festival was chump change compared to Madoff. The Fyre Festival suckered the egos and libidos of thousands of fools, mostly male fools, who wanted to be somebody and bang a supermodel, or at least get a picture with one, to be in the orbit of someone who was considered to be somebody. Most of whom were actually nobody. But our fucked celebrity-obsessed society constantly elevates nobodies to somebodies, doesn't it? For no good reason at all. But unlike Madoff, Billy McFarland was scamming himself along with his investors, employees, and his marks. You could call it a circle scam, I suppose. He actually operated the way movie studios do. They never finance their own disasters. They get suckers to do that for them. And they orbit the globe, sucking money out of individuals and corporations. And overriding all the financial considerations of those investors is one underlying motivator. Maybe I can fuck a star. There are businesses that are basically recession and fail-proof, like Seagram's Booze and Coca-Cola. And both those corporations bought movie studios knowing full well they were foolish, stupid investments. And I guarantee you, the guys at the top who engineered those purchases did so because A, they thought they might get a chance to bang a star, and B, there's no glamour in booze or soda. None. And everybody wants to add some glamour to their lives, don't they? You tell someone you make liquor? Big fucking deal. So can any hillbilly in the Ozarks. Soda's even easier. But if you're in the entertainment business, well, right away you're interesting, and that is due to the rub-off effect of celebrity. I've been in dozens and dozens of corner executive offices, and in 90% of them there was not a picture of the wife or kid on the wall. No, there's a picture of the said executone with some professional athlete or TV star or movie star or, at the very lowest rung of celebrity, some fuckdog politician. That's scraping the bottom of the celebrity barrel. But that's how guys making elephant bucks in corporate America tend to calibrate their Q scores, by whatever celebrity they can buttonhook for a photo op at the company golf outing. The Fyre Festival was actually a second scam for Billy McFarland. His first was a nutty quasi credit card. Well, not even a credit card. It was just a fancy metal sheath for a credit card. It was called magnesis, which of course is a made-up word. Sounds a little like magnesium, doesn't it? And when you ignite magnesium, it burns crazy hot and bright. That always seems to be step one with stupid, disastrous scams. Invent a word that is sort of evocative of something else. That helps confuse small minds, like Enron. That was another made-up word that wound up part of scam lore. Didn't mean a fucking thing. A multi-billion dollar corporation that actually did not make or do anything. Billions were lost and people went to jail. Scammers sometimes like to take a real word and fuck with the spelling. Fire Festival was spelled with a Y. Looks like Middle English or some shit, right? Maybe Beowulf vintage. Any idea how that connects to a Caribbean music festival? But some people probably looked at fire spelled with a Y and went, cool man. Porn companies would consistently spend the same or more on the still photograph on the box as they did on the entire 90-minute or 2 hours of video inside the box. Looks like the Fire Festival believed in the porn principle of marketing. They shot some really great video, very slickly done and edited, top-notch, really. And 85% of that video was insanely hot women in bikinis on gorgeous beaches. They'd run in slow-mo toward the camera, just the right amount of jiggle in the right places, all wild eyes and flashing teeth. They'd double up on speeding jet skis, one vixen piggybacked on another. Several gave each other kisses. Howard Stern used to say the key to entertainment success was lesbians. Maybe he was right. When you see the Fire Festival video, which I will post on the show page at thatlarryshow.com, you may notice something interesting. You may notice what's not in the video. There isn't one male, not one, anywhere near those platoons of pointy chicks. Sends a very clear message to the rubes and hooples, eh? No competition, boys. The field is yours. You'll be a rooster in the henhouse. There also isn't a single image of any musician slated to perform at the so-called music festival. That says a lot. Vapor talent. There isn't a single frame of the lodgings, not so much as a bed or a crapper or a pillow. Just use your imagination, suckers. Think luxury villa. Let your mind fill in the blanks. The Chiron text is also revealing. It reveals absolutely nothing. Phrases like, quote, two transformative weekends. What the fuck does transformative mean? Wasn't that a buzzword from a recent political campaign? And our nation was transformed into a shitbox. The video text also says, an immersive music festival. What does that mean? Do you take a jacuzzi with a band after the show? Skinny dip with them in the surf? More meaningless bullshit. On a remote private island in the Exumas, once owned by Pablo Escobar. Ha, there you go. An allusion to a criminal billionaire. You're gonna party like a drug kingpin. In fact, they originally intended to have the festival on Escobar's island, but it didn't have the infrastructure either. So they held it elsewhere. But they still told the rubes and hooples that it would be on Escobar's former island. Because even dead drug lords have a certain badass cachet, don't they? Next text in the video, on the boundaries of the impossible. No shit. When people get no music, no food, nowhere to take a leak and find themselves sleeping on soaking wet mattresses in fucking FEMA tents for thousands of dollars up front, they were no longer on the boundaries of the impossible. They were living in an impossible nightmare. That could be transformative. The video text said, quote, a quest, unquote. Yeah, a quest for food, drink, shelter, and a fucking ride home. To push beyond those boundaries. Wonder what they meant by that one. To milk more money from suckers? And corking it. The oldest con man's come on in the world. Limited availability. Nothing motivates morons like, act now, supplies are limited. The most successful and famous nightclub of the 20th century was unquestionably Studio 54. There were many competitors, Regines, New York, and others, but only 54 achieved global fame and the patronage of superstars. For a couple of years, it was the unrivaled hipster hang on the planet. Mick, Elton, every supermodel, movie star, record mogul, fashion designer, it was the place to be seen. How did it get that way? Because one of the owners, Steve Rubell, on opening night and for several nights thereafter, blasted the music inside while locking the doors and letting nobody in, telling those on the outside it was full to capacity. The idiot club-going crowd swallowed Steve's scam, and each night the crowds outside grew larger, with people offering hundreds, even thousands of dollars to doormen to let them inside. Ooh, how surprised they would have been. By the time Rubell finally opened the doors, the place was a smash hit. But 54, using an ancient marketing ploy, actually did deliver something. The disco was crawling with pointy chicks, great music, with blizzards of coke and celebs, even if the celebs were inaccessible in the VIP lounge. But still, to say you had even been inside 54 was something of a rite of hipster passage. This fire festival was supposed to be maybe a Studio 54 in the Caribbean, but it turned out to be a complete shit show. And what sets it apart from other shit shows was McFarlane's moronic conflation of positive thinking with magical thinking. A positive thinker looks at a difficult task and figures a way to achieve it. A magical thinker looks at a challenge and says,
it will all work out.
With no idea whatsoever how the fuck to make it work out. McFarland had never achieved anything real in his so-called career. Magnesis was a failure, but he didn't wind up in jail for that one, so he dreams up fire and, like Madoff, hitches his wagon to a known celeb, Ja Rule. Certainly no Spielberg, but with more currency than McFarland. And then he just starts bullshitting everyone, from caterers to construction crews to airlines and on and on and on. He gets guys with deep pockets and small brains to give him millions to make it happen. But sometimes just throwing money at a problem won't fix it. He consults with companies that have real experience putting on festivals on the scale he wants, and they tell him at a minimum it takes a full year to set up an event on that scale, and many more millions of dollars. That's where McFarlane's hubris and or magical thinking kicks in. All he's ever done is dream up a metal sheath for a credit card with a $250 fee that does absolutely nothing. So he's going to tell seasoned concert promoters who know what they're doing that they don't know shit, and he'll make it work on his schedule. And it starts to unravel right from the beginning. They can't possibly build the luxury accommodations they promised, so they substitute FEMA tents. They can't run the apps they want because the island has inadequate Wi-Fi. There's also a little matter of no running water on the island, so where are they going to get cooking facilities and toilets at flush? But magical thinking McFarland just keeps smiling and magically thinking and telling everyone it will all work out. And hundreds of suckers go along with him, suckers he has flown in from New York, and local suckers, none of whom will ever be paid for their heroic efforts to make his idiotic idea a reality. One of the few who did get paid was Kendall Jenner, who pocketed $250,000 for a few minutes' work. As D-Day approached, everyone knew it'd be an epic fail and begged McFarland to cancel and offer refunds, but he was already in way too deep to back out, and his ego wouldn't let him anyway. So finally the big day arrives, and there's no food and no running water and no entertainment, and it's been raining torrentially, so even the shitty FEMA tents and mattresses are soaking wet. There's really no viable lodgings. But the other magically thinking fucktards, all those pale-faced guys with hard-ons who've been sitting in stark, monochromatic cubicles all winter and want to get the fuck out of cold, gray, slushy New York and maybe at least get a selfie with Haley Baldwin or waft the scent of her shampoo as she walks by, those poor, dumb bastards are boarding the charter jets in New York heading for the paradise they watched on YouTube 40 or 50 times. Those guys who have forked over thousands for luxury accommodations and gourmet meals prepared by celebrity chefs, those guys begin to arrive inexorably. And since not a goddamn thing is ready, McFarland herds the first wave onto a dock at a beach and breaks out the tequila, and pretty soon these naive jerks are too loaded to realize they are being stalled. Maybe McFarland thought they'd all just pass out and wake up when it was time to go home. But McFarland cannot stop, even with magical thinking. He can't stop the Earth's rotation and waning sunlight, and people are getting hungry and tired, and they want to check into their luxury villas. And that's when these poor, dumb rubes are led to their FEMA tents with the soaking wet mattresses. And that's when Darwinism sets in, and it's every man for himself, and people scramble to find tents and mattresses that aren't soaked, and cheese sandwiches, and some assholes are actually going into adjacent tents and pissing on unoccupied mattresses. Oh yeah. And there's no way to get off the island, no water taxis or plane service, nothing. Everyone is just marooned. I wonder if any of those guys looked around hoping to find a leader, a Moses, to part the Caribbean Sea and lead them to salvation. The low-grade suckers may have, the smarter ones probably looked around and realized everyone else was just as gullible as they and hadn't a fucking clue what to do now. The next day might have been worse than the prior evening. They were locked in a stifling air terminal with no water and inadequate toilets for many hours. The evacuation was glacial. People are still at each other's throats about it and will be for many years. But are there any of us really impervious to con jobs? Yes. Here's those two tips I promised you at the top of the show. Those who do not get conned, ask questions. Anybody could have looked up McFarland's background and, based on his magnesis debacle, seen a red flag for the Fyre Festival. No matter what the situation, asking questions, especially tough questions, will always keep you from being a victim of cons and hustles. The second tip is to always look for what's not there. If there were luxury accommodations for the festival, why wouldn't they showcase them in the teaser video? Gourmet meals require gourmet settings. Where the fuck were the restaurants? Celebrity chefs? Where were Bobby Flay and Emeril? And at the very core of the whole scam, where was the music? Not so much as a single still image of Blink 182 or any other act. Most A-list music acts are booked years out. But the suckers who viewed that video only saw what they wanted to see. Supermodels, jet skis, luxury yachts, cigarette boats, sloops and catamarans and private jets. Nowhere did it say subscribers would have access to any of those toys. I've yet to see the Hulu movie on the Fyre Festival, but the Netflix one is fascinating. Check it out. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Slide by the homepage at thatlarryshow.com for a look at that original Fyre Festival video. It's worth it just for the pointy chicks. And while you're there, check one of those subscribe buttons, whether Apple Podcasts, Google Stitcher, RSS, email, Spotify, Android, we've got it all covered for you. Click that Patreon button if you feel like joining the Take No Shit Dojo. It's where truth lives, at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. There you'll find dozens of bonus episodes, custom recordings, signed books, and more. Come back and hang with me this Sunday for Sinner Sunday, where we take a look at things spiritual. There we've got a full bar, Killer Barbecue, Brother Dre, and the Lariats. You might dig it. Until that time, take no shit.